Hello and welcome to the season's penultimate episode of the Total Saints podcast. I'm Martin Stark. We're streaming TSP live on our Facebook page and our YouTube channel. So if you're watching on either of those platforms and it's still Sunday night, you can get involved in the conversation using the comments section. Coming up this week on the podcast, reaction to the final game of the season, which ended in a heavy defeat at Leicester. Let me introduce you to our TSP guests this week. Just the two of them. Steve Grant is the owner of Saints Web. Are you looking forward to the summer now, Steve? Are you glad that's over?
Oh, thank God that's over. Jeez, just, oh God. Just everything about this end of season with, I mean, us basically just sacking it off for 3 months and Liverpool potentially winning everything. I mean, thank God City sorted themselves out towards the end of that, because I think I'd have just gone off into the forest for a few hours, I think, otherwise.
Gone for a walk.
Yeah.
Glenda the Court is the writer of the weekly Saints blog, League One Minus 10. Are you fully focused on the cricket now? Football's done. Let's
Hampshire in summer. Hampshire are doing all right. So let's...
Have you been snapped up by a cricket podcast?
See how we screw that up.
Yeah. We'll probably mess it up. I'm not quite sure how Hampshire are doing so well, because they seem to have a very sort of strange team that they're picking most games. But they're...
Sounds familiar.
Unlike us. Yeah, unlike Southampton Football Club. They're sorting out at the moment, and they've got individuals that are stepping up and doing great things. So long may it continue, and maybe Hampshire will. We last won the county championship when I was three, I think. So it's overdue. Overdue. So that'd be nice. So I'm looking forward to a bit of cricket in the summer.
Good. Well, thank you both for your company this week. The biggest hello and thank you, of course, is reserved to our wonderful patrons, wherever you're listening or watching this week. Welcome to episode 199 of the Total Saints podcast.
This is the Total Saints podcast with Martin Stark, Steve Grant, Glenda LaCour, and The Athletic's Dan Sheldon.
Now, this week, we're going to be hosting a special live edition of the pod. It's going to be in Southampton, and it's for our 200th episode. It's coming up on Friday, which is the 27th of May. We're going to be at the Five Rivers Sports Bar in Beavers Valley. I think the doors open at 7. We're going to be going live at 8. The evening is going to be supporting the Saints Foundation. 100% of the ticket proceeds are going directly to the charity, and we're going to be chatting to some of the guys from the Saints Foundation to find out more about their work too. We'll also be looking back at the highs and lows of the season, discussing the business that needs to be done in the summer. We're going to crown the winner of the TSP Fantasy Football League, and you'll have a chance to quiz the panel and share a beer with some fellow Saints fans as well. Drown our sorrows together. So if you'd like to come along, you can find the link to the event in the description for the podcast. And of course, if you're not able to make it, you can always drop us a question via the website. So let's get on to the final game then. As I said, thank God that's over. The final game of the season ends in defeat away at Leicester. Glenn, when we did the predictions last week, you said we lose 3-1. So you weren't far off. Kind of worked out as you thought. That's the positive.
Yeah. It worked out kind of exactly as I thought it was going to work out. It's not strictly true. I thought we'd let in early goals again, and then it would just be a boring game. But the first half looked tediously dull. Not a lot happened. Jamie Vardy had a dive, as usual. Didn't get booked by John Moss, as usual. I saw the one decent chance they had, Castagne's header, that he really should have done better with, that he put over the bar. So the first half was kind of a non-event. Second half, I'm sure, I think Steve's going to go into this one. The first goal we let in is an absolute calamity from Lianco. It's just dreadful. Once that goes in, you know, it's, we're not any good at the moment when we go behind. We're not any good when we go in front, but we're not any good when we go behind. And once it went 2-0, that was it. Getting back to 2-1 with the penalty was, that was a nice bit of play by Stuart Armstrong before he got fouled. I thought it was interesting that we were fighting with the goalkeeper to get the ball back just so we could let in another one instantly. that worked out well. And that third goal was absolute garbage as well. Everyone just standing around. And the fourth goal was the same. You know, Perez scores. He's got four players stood near him, and he's in the middle of them. No one's marking him. No one engages. It's just garbage. So, yeah, again, it's the same as it's been for the last couple of months. Just absolutely dreadful. And yeah, I know we'll probably get onto it, but there's got to be questions asked all over the place. Players, management, where are we going? What are we doing? What's next year going to be like? I mean, when they choose the teams most likely to get relegated next year, they always look at the team that finished the season badly. Now, I don't know. I guess we're probably last 10 games, we're probably second bottom, just above Watford. I imagine we've got worse form than Norwich. We'll certainly be down with them. So, you know, if we go into next season with the same set of players and, you know, nothing changing, then we're
not going to get to 30 points, are we?
Severely up against it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll get onto all of that in just a minute. Steve, what was your initial take on another dreadful afternoon?
Yeah, I mean, as Glenn said, the first half kind of seemed to be two teams that didn't seem to really be that fussed. The one thing I did notice was that our second half started about 5 minutes before everybody else, like all the other nine games that were going on, because basically everybody was just very clear in their minds of let's just get this crap over with.
Get on with it.
Yeah. And then, of course, you had that fairly horrible clash between Adam Armstrong and Johnny Evans, which then ends us having with 7 minutes of injury time added on. So they didn't quite get what they were going for there. But yeah, I mean, it was just annoying. I mean, as Glenn said, there was nothing in that game for 50 minutes. And then all of a sudden we do something stupid and it's gone away from us again. I mean, I get that McCarthy's obviously not played for ages, so communication between him and Lianco probably isn't sort of up to speed, but all it needs is a big shout from him just to say keepers. Lianco can duck under that quite easily and the ball just bounces through to him and it's no danger. And then we don't have this slightly strange argument about sportsmanship in the game. I mean, you've seen the Premier League. There is no sportsmanship. It's win at all costs.
Yeah, and you certainly can't expect it. You can't expect the other team to give you the ball back in this case.
Yeah,
just in terms of that first goal, though, Steve. Because just before we came on, I was listening to the interview that Ralph was doing, and he was saying or suggesting that Leicester should have given us the ball back from the kickoff to score to make it 1-1 because he wasn't happy.
We'd have missed. Well, yeah.
Because it was an injury, wasn't it? I think just before, and then the ref gave the ball back to them and not to us. But it's if we don't switch off, then it's not a problem.
Yeah, so Vardy basically runs into Romeo's shoulder, I think, and yeah, play gets stopped, and all of a sudden, I mean, I'm not even sure how he ended up. I can only assume he didn't even get any treatment in the end. But play was stopped for it. And all of a sudden, the ball's at Schmeichel's feet. He goes long, and Lianco screws up the impressive feat of screwing up two headers. One which he heads straight up in the air, which, I mean, literally, you head that at any other angle other than literally straight up, and you probably get away with it. But he's headed it straight up, got himself in a bit of a tangle, tries to head it back to McCarthy, and just doesn't put anywhere near enough on it. And basically allows Vardy to go clean through.
Good initial save from McCarthy, though.
McCarthy spreads himself well, makes a very good save. But then Maddison's obviously got an open goal to tap it into. So yeah, it's a dreadful goal, isn't it? And it's the sort of individual mistake we've been doing a lot of this sort of last 3 months. And it's just we've got to cut it out. And it again comes down to individuals not doing what they need to. I mean, I like sort of Lianco's passion and the way he kind of wants to get involved in everything, both on and off the pitch. But unfortunately, his problem today was that having made that one massive mistake, actually having played quite well, I thought, in the 50 minutes previous, all of a sudden he then just completely loses the plot and he's all over the place for the remainder. His head's gone completely. Which I kind of guess you should sort of expect with a player who kind of has the attributes that he has in terms of the way that he's sort of very sort of fist pumpy and sort of adrenaline based. And when you do have that sort of style, if your headspace isn't right, then you're going to be all over the shop. And yeah, that's basically what happened.
It's not going to make his Instagram reel this week, is it? That's for sure, on his highlights.
I wouldn't have thought so.
Glenn, let's just talk about the starting lineup, because there were the three changes from the defeat at Liverpool. So Armstrong, Romeo and Adam Armstrong came in. And we'll talk about Adam Armstrong in a minute, but it meant that it looked like Salisu was playing on the left of a back four.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the changes, I just thought, oh, this is three straight swaps, which is what it looked like. So yeah, we're going to play
Redmond playing at wing back.
Yeah, so I expected Redmond to be at left wing back, but it was basically a back four with Salisu at left back, and Redmond was playing up front. You know, or so it looked to me, with Adam Armstrong. Now you've picked two strikers who've got two and one goals between them for the season. Hey ho, didn't work. And they both sort of buzzed around and they tried to get busy and tried to get on the ball. But it first half in particular, I just thought we're just never going to score it. And we didn't, you know, again we didn't score from open play again. It's come from a set, you know, from a penalty. Again, it's an area of the team. I mean, when was the last time one of our strikers scored? I think we touched on this before. I think it was that it might have even been back at the Tottenham game, or was it Brozier in the cup game against West Ham?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think one of our strikers has scored since then. And all that's done for me is highlighted the shocking problems we've had. We were all smug at the start of the season when Brozier was playing well, thinking, yeah, we got rid of Danny Ings, we got all that money, and but it hasn't worked, has it? I mean, we've severely struggled. So we're playing Adam Armstrong up front, who's struggled since he's come in, and Redmond, who's never a forward in a million years. So I was pleased we went back to the formation that we have got our better results with, but it just seemed to have a kind of lack of energy about it. And that formation for me only really works when all 11 players are on it for the whole 90 minutes. And even in the first half, in the first few minutes of the second half, even before we went behind, you could see that we were going to get sliced open at some point, because we just weren't 100% on it. So I mean, I'm pleased he left out. Who did he leave out? He left out Teller and someone else from Ambrosia from last week. I mean, Teller deserved to get left out because he was terrible last week. And it probably was better going with the back four. But ultimately we've lost 4-1 again, and it's just not great. But there is an element to me of rearranging the deck chairs on the sinking ship sort of thing. It almost seems to me that it doesn't matter what you do at the moment with the current sort of attitude that seems to be amongst the players I think you can accept as a fan players being on the beach for the last game of the season when there's nothing much riding on it, but we've been on the beach for the last three months. No, we've been on the beach for far too long, and there's been lots of people spending lots of money going to games and, you know, trying to support the team, and they ain't been getting a lot back recently.
Yeah. Dean says, do you think it's a lack of goals is due to the strikers or the lack of creativity from midfield? That's an interesting point. And we've talked about the number 10s.
Yeah, it's both, isn't it? You score goals as a team. And obviously the set pieces are a big part of it. And we probably score a fair amount of goals from those. But open play, we have very, very little coming from the number 10s in terms of service. And the forwards at the moment are not playing well enough to, you know, magic things out of nowhere. We're not good enough to, you know, like when Man United were getting all those results when Solskjaer was in charge, they were getting results because they had individual brilliance that would pop up somewhere and save the day. We had that at the start of the season with Brozier. He would come up with the odd brilliant thing and score a goal. Che Adams did it at Watford, you know, a lovely curler into the top corner. You've had Adam Armstrong stuck the odd sort of thunderbolt in the net sort of thing, but it's too little, doesn't happen enough. And so so if you haven't got those individual moments, you've got to do it as a team. And we only seem to be able to, our method of attacking now seems to be long ball or over committing, which means when we don't score, we lose the ball. And then it's just horrible. We're just so open. So it's not great all over the shop at the moment.
Steve, just a word on Adam Armstrong and his performance today. That was a nasty clash of heads, not a great end to what's been a tough season. You know, we came in at the start and we thought, well, you know, it might take a while to hit the ground running, but it's not the season he was hoping for.
No, it's been tough, but I think part of that represents the huge step up when you're a centre forward. Championship defences and Premier League defences are not remotely the same. You don't get the fraction of a second time that you get in the Championship. And I mean, we've discussed this before, that Armstrong's goals, the vast majority of them in the Championship came with basically, they were first time shots, sort of snapshots, but they give you half a yard of space in the Championship. Premier League, you don't get that. You don't get that time and space to kind of make that happen. The only time he got it was that Villa game where he scored the only goal. That was basically an carbon copy of loads of goals he scored for Blackburn last season. But yeah, he's just not come up against defences who have presented him those opportunities, unfortunately.
Do you think there's a Premier League player in him? Do you think it will? Is it like Che Adams and it will come good?
Difficult to tell. I mean, the club of our size, you struggle to get players who when they make a step up, hit the ground running. It's not often that happens. Usually when players do make the step up and do get off to a fast start, it's because they've come up with a team and they've already got the relationships with their teammates. So everybody knows where they're going to go and you can create that way. Obviously, we had that with Lambert, Lallana, etc. Whereas he's come into a completely new environment, doesn't know anybody, and it takes time to build those partnerships. And unfortunately, that's something we kind of, as a team, you don't really get, because results are always needed. And if you're not performing, then you'll find that teams will find someone else who maybe performs a bit better. And of course, Brozier came in and did the business for a few months. And Armstrong fell down the pecking order to the extent that he was even behind Shane Long at one point. Which, I mean, Long's performances by and large were actually okay, but it's not a good sign when your £15 million striker is not getting a game, and someone who may well hang up his boots this summer is coming in ahead of him. So yeah, I think, I mean, this summer's a big one for him. If he can make sure he's in the right condition at the start of pre-season and he hits the summer running, then maybe there's something there. But if not, we kind of need to have some sort of backup plan, I think.
Our pad, who's watching on YouTube, says, do we know why Brozier didn't even make the bench? I don't think we do. I don't think it was an injury. Let's just talk about the bench and the choices there, Glenn, because that was a bit odd for me. You've got, I assume, like Brozier, maybe because he's not sticking around next season, don't start him. He's not on the bench. That's fine. And then you get like Shane Long coming on.
But Shane Long and Theo Walcott are there
next week. Yeah. And Gineppo. Is it that Ralph doesn't trust the options that he's got with the players that are coming through, or is it professionalism? Because, you know, these guys are the Long and Walcott are the biggest earners at the club. So should they be on the bench?
I haven't got an answer, and I can't even begin to imagine why, as a club, we've been, if you look back through our social media from the start of the season, it's all about, we're the club that gives youngsters a chance, you know, and we were showing off about Tino Livramento and how we'd given him a chance and he'd come through. Obviously, they've got to be good enough. But I honestly, for the life of me, can't understand if even only for giving them the experience of sitting on the bench, why you don't have four youngsters on there. They're probably not going to come on, but to not even have them on the bench is really, really strange. I mean, Theo Walcott, he hasn't made the bench in, I don't know, probably 80% of the games over the last, since January. So why on earth does he make the bench today? He wasn't going to come on. There was no way Theo Walcott was going to come on. He's about fifth choice in every position that he can play. So he's not going to come on. I just find it really surprising that, you know, with our club being marketing itself, if you like, the way it does as the place for youngsters to come, why some of the 18-year-olds were not sat on the bench. I know they played on Thursday, so it's 3 days ago. Someone should have been able to sit on the bench and at least sort of like take in the game and get a bit of experience. I don't understand it, and I honestly don't have an answer, unless Ralph's trying to prove a point, because we know managers have done that in the past. They've done things like not filled up the bench because they wanted to say, look, we ain't got enough players. So maybe he was saying, look, we've got nine on the bench here and five of them are not going to be here next year. So we need to sign X number of players. Maybe he's doing something like that. But it's a pretty weird way to go about things if that is the case. So I'm afraid I don't have
we're all at a loss. It's just one of the many things we're at a loss with at the moment. Would you have chucked a few in, Steve? Would you have put a few on the bench?
I mean, to be honest, I don't necessarily know whether I'd have gone for the sort of proper, sort of full-on throw all the under-18s in, because, as Glenn said, they had a pretty tough night of things on Thursday. Yeah. And maybe in another another situation where actually that game was last week, then perhaps you see one or two of the more sort of prominent ones. Like obviously Dibling was on the bench for the Brentford game, but I think he'd been injured, so he only came off the bench for the kids on Thursday as well. And Ballard's injured as well, so I wonder whether the unavailability of the big guns of that team probably hadn't had an impact. You kind of look at the others. Are any of the others remotely ready to make the step up? No idea. I mean, I don't watch enough of the under 18s to or the B team to know whether any of them have kind of got the sort of physicality, I guess, for the big league
to make the step.
Right now.
You'd
so
thought, like Thierry Small might have been worth another look. You know, I know.
Potentially. Given that we didn't have a left back, and I mean, Salisu showed today.
Or one competent centre back.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
At the moment.
But yeah, I mean, to be honest, of all the ones, I'd have thrown. I mean, what's the point in giving Smallbone 3 minutes of injury time? Like Ralph bigs the kid up constantly. And I mean, we've seen in sort of fleeting performances that there's something in there.
Yeah,
not quite sure whether kind of he's back up to full speed or not from his injury. Maybe he needs the full pre-season to kind of have a proper run at that. But you'd have thought that you could have given him half an hour today at least. Hmm. So I found that a little bit strange. I mean, Gineppo's not really been in and around the team for ages, and yet he comes on, didn't really do anything either. So yeah, it was all a bit, kind of almost felt a little bit half-arsed.
Yeah.
It was like, well, these are the guys that have got us here, so they're the ones that are going to see us out. And if that means that we're on the end of a beating, then that means that they can be the ones that take the flak for it.
Hmm. Glenn, Saint Christoph, or Super Saint Christoph, who's watching on YouTube, says, "Is it our expectations that are unrealistic?" And I know we've kind of touched on this before, and we will do more at the live event on Friday as well. Season after season, almost like the lowest investment, the lowest net spend. Is it a case of it's kind of catching up with us now, and we finished 15th, we got 40 points? Is that kind of all we deserve?
I think it's been catching up with us for a while, to be honest. I think the selling of Danny Ings at the start of the season, you know, 10 minutes before the season started, I think that has been a big loss. But I don't think that's made a massive difference to where we finished. Maybe we'd have nicked another couple of results and finished a few points higher. I think it depends where you came in as a fan to what your expectations are. I mean, I came in a long, long time ago, so I've seen it all, so nothing really surprises me now. I thought this squad, once we got up and running and we had that sort of little run against the big teams, there was a definite chance to push on. And all the players have proved to me, and the manager, is that maybe they're not ready to do that. Certainly a number of the players, I look at the squad now and I just think we've only got about six players who I think are actually good enough for where the club wants to be. But it's all very well the club saying we want to be in the top half, we want to be in the top 10. The lack of investment over the years, I mean, you know, our two main strikers are two strikers that we've got out of the Championship with, and we've signed them because they've got 1 year left on their contract, 15 million quid each. I mean, Che Adams has had his moments, but he doesn't score enough goals for a striker. Adam Armstrong is looking very, very similar. There are two main strikers. You can't skimp at the top end of the pitch, I don't think, and expect to score a load of, to score enough goals to be a decent side. And we've combined that recently, obviously, with not defending terribly well either. So there is a hell of a lot of work to do, but my expectations are not that high, to be honest.
So you met them.
You know, you do build it up sometimes. I mean, like, you know, after that Tottenham game when we won 3-2, we looked brilliant, you know, and suddenly we had this starting 11 that looked really good. But a number of those players in that starting 11 have let themselves and therefore me down massively over the last few months, and they've just proved to me they're not good enough to keep up that level of performance. I think it's important to remember how young some of the players are. You know, if you look at someone like Salisu, he's capable of very, very good games, but he's probably been running on empty the last few months, and so mistakes have crept in. I mean, I think we've got I think we've got too many young players in the side. Salisu, I think, would be a much better player with a more experienced centre-half next to him. And I think that is part of our problem. And our experienced players, I mean, you can see, you know, Bednarek has not had a great season. Romeo's form's gone off a cliff. Hmm. So there's an imbalance in the squad in terms of experience as well, which is, I think, the experience is what keeps you picking up results, you know, or grind out results when things aren't going terrible or you're not playing terribly well. So, yeah, back to the original question. I don't have massive expectations, but I can understand people thinking we were going to do better this year, bearing in mind where we were in December time.
Well, Gary says, is it time that Ralph departed? That's going to be item one on the agenda when we all sit around with a pint on Friday, because I think we could talk about that for an hour. Steve, if you look at the league position, just the, you know, the black and white, same as last year, 3 points less. It's whichever way you dress it up, it's not been good.
It hasn't. And it does kind of emphasise how much we've kind of fallen off a cliff since February. That I think after we won at Spurs, I think we were something like 19 points ahead of the, based on the corresponding games from last season. And yet we've come to the end of the season and somehow we're 3 points worse. So we've dropped off 22 points in games against teams that we've got points against last year. Yeah, the last 3 months has obviously been pretty concerning. 5 points from a possible 36. I mean, that's not relegation form. That is finishing bottom, way like probably below Norwich form. So yeah, something's got to be looked at. Depends what those conversations in the boardroom and in meetings go like, as to whether whoever it is that's making the decisions now just sort of decides that Ralph, whether they think Ralph's the guy that's going to keep us going, or whether they want to possibly help him out by changing some of the backroom staff over. I mean, we're kind of assuming that there's going to be a fair amount of player turnover,
which there might not be.
But again, wait and see. It's still not quite sure on that front, or whether they just decide, well, no, let's, now we've got our feet under the table. We kind of liked what we saw for the first 2 months of our tenure, but since then it's been nowhere near good enough. So sorry, we're going to make a change. It may come to that if they've already got a list of managers that they think would do a better job with similar or maybe slightly better resources. Again, kind of watch this space. Then they might think it's kind of worth kind of rolling that dice.
Mark's talking about players. Which ones would you be disappointed if they left? Obviously, James Ward-Prowse, Carl Walker-Peters, Livramento, who's injured. I kind of feel that's one over a beer on Friday as well. But Glenn, this, in terms of like who comes in, we still don't really know what sort of signings we're going to be making. So it's difficult for us to, or I think it's difficult for us to start saying, well, actually this player would be good or that player would be good, because we don't know whether they're going to be going out and buying proven Premier League players, or whether we can expect that we're still going to spend 15 million quid. We just don't have to sell somebody first before we get somebody in.
Whenever we get to this part of the season and you start looking at what areas of the team need strengthening and stuff like that, I always think you have to strengthen the first team. You know, you have to strengthen the first team. And if a player drops out of the first team as a result of you doing that, then that's what you need to do. If you've got a centre forward and you buy a better one and the other one ends up on the bench, that's strengthening the squad. I've never really seen the point too much of buying squad filler players. You know, you should replace from the top if you can afford to do so. Ralph always talked about there being basically six positions in the team. You know, goalkeeper, centre-half, full-back, number six, number 10, striker. In my opinion, honestly, we need one player for every single one of those six positions. Really, you know, we certainly need a striker. We're going to have to get a striker because the one we've got on loan has gone back. I'm not sure Romeo in the centre of midfield is going to be a 38 game a season player. From now on, he seems to have really struggled the last few weeks, which has ultimately ended up with him being dropped. Wide players, we've talked about that to death. The fact that we've got loads, but none of them really
good, yeah.
are good enough. Stuart Armstrong is the best of a bad bunch, but he seems to struggle to stay fit for long periods of time. Fullbacks are okay, but we got the issue with Tino being injured. Centre-halves, we desperately need an experienced, good centre-half. And the goalkeeper situation, which we've talked about to death. So that's all six positions that need covering. I don't really know what the amount of money in the budget is going to be. And I'm not an expert on obscure European leagues. So who are we going to sign from the Austrian first division or whatever? Are we going to be doing that? Or are we going to be looking at, championship players again? Or are we going to be looking at players in Chelsea's academy or Manchester City's academy? I mean, I see Rory Delap's son was linked the other day. Now, I don't know much about him other than he's a striker. But again, it's another really, really young player. So that might work. It might not. It really is a step into the unknown this summer, especially as we've got the new owners and we've got, Rasmus Ankersen with his Brentford model, if you want to call it that, of signing players you haven't heard of from Scandinavia. Are we going to do that? Are we going to do what we normally do and look at the sort of B grade leagues and try and sign players out of there? So it's going to be interesting. But one thing's for sure, we can't sit here and do nothing.
No, that's definitely true. And Steve, there were a few stories this week, or at least saw one story that the club are going to back Ralph. So you think, well, that must have been leaked from somewhere. So if they are going to do that, if that is the case, is it about getting a good marquee signing in early, or is it more at the moment about the players that go? Because I'd be quite excited to see a few of them out the door first.
I think people are always more interested in incomings. I think if a few players drift off at various points during the summer, it's like, okay, well, thanks, but yeah, don't let the door close.
We'll drive you there.
Out. Yeah, even if it involves going to Italy. But yeah, I always think incomings are what kind of gets people going. I mean, it's kind of the modern way, isn't it, that actual excitement with football isn't actually really about the football anymore. It's all about transfers and signing players. I think FIFA Ultimate Team has got a lot to say for this absolute nonsense situation that football finds itself in. But that is where we are, and so I think getting at least one or two signings over the line very early, and not doing the financial nonsense of waiting till July the 1st to do it all, because it then appears in next season's accounts. Get it done. Get the PR boost.
Get the season ticket sold.
Yeah. I mean, goodwill is an intangible thing on the balance sheet, but season ticket revenue definitely goes on there. So you've got to, I think after the last 3 months that people have put up with, I think you've kind of got to provide a bit more of a carrot for people to part with their hard earned money.
Get everybody back on side.
Yeah, because I mean, at the end of the day, it's not cheap. I mean, I know we're not the most expensive in the league, but we're certainly not the cheapest either. And yet, again, the whole sort of net spend thing, we don't spend what we don't have, which is fine, but perhaps it's got to be spent a little bit smarter and a little bit quicker. Make sure if we get the drop on a club or two on a particular player who's being scouted quite widely, then all of a sudden everyone sort of wakes up and says, oh, Saints are getting their business done. They know exactly what they want. These owners know what they're doing. Okay, great. I can get on board with that.
Yeah, as you said last week, Glenn, but it's going to be another summer of hitting F5 every day to see what's going on. I want to finish with a positive. Let's talk about the women's game from yesterday, because it wasn't a classic. Two teams that only lost one game all season, I think, but that was a great result yesterday. So pleased to see that for them, Glenn.
Yeah, it wasn't the best of games, but they did the job that they needed to do. Knockout football, cup football, playoff football, whatever. It's about winning the game. And they were very professional in the way they went about it. There was very few alarms. All they had to, having gone 1-0 up, which is a lovely goal. If you haven't seen it, check out the way Sofia Farrow takes the ball down and zips around the goalkeeper's. Brilliant finish. Having got a goal in front and dominated the first half, really. Wolves had a player sent off just before half time for a moment of madness. So having already been booked, she then got nutmegged, hacked away at the player who nutmegged her, and then for good measure had a kick at her on the ground. So I think she got about four yellow cards.
It would have been a straight red anyway, wouldn't it?
Bit of dissent as well, added that into the mix. So yeah, that was special. But the second half was, I think it got a bit nervy, and we didn't, as quite often happens, teams play better with 10 men or 10 people rather. And we didn't really stretch them out as well as we should have done. Didn't keep the ball well enough. So it got a bit nervy. There was a couple of sort of silly mistakes at the back that could have let Wolves in, but but ultimately they got the job done quite comfortably. So yeah, fair play to them. And it was an enjoyable one to watch. And I just hope that the club give them the sort of backing they deserve to do whatever they need to do in the Championship next year. And you know, it'd be nice if they mimic the men's team and just had the 1 year in the Championship and went straight back up. I'm not too au fait with the strength of the Women's Championship, but you know, there won't be the teams in there that you thrash 9-0 like they have been this year. I mean, who loses 9-0? I mean,
is it your Bristol Cities and that, like Bristol City, isn't it? Bristol, or is it?
Bristol City, Lewis, obviously Coventry United, who stayed up with that absolutely ridiculous 94th minute free kick, sent Watford down. Who else is in there? Birmingham are coming down, I think, for the first time since the Super League was formed.
Some meaty games then.
There'll be some good teams.
Yeah, there won't be any easy games in there. But then, you know, I was talking about the sort of age range of the men's team at the moment. The women's team, they've got kind of experience at centre-back and in centre-midfield, but everyone else is young. You know, everyone else is sort of 20, 21, 22. So, and we got... There's one woman who's ridiculously young, 17 or something. So that there's a lot of improvement to be had in those players, and obviously there'll be one or two more coming in, I'd have thought, for the for the Championship. So yeah, like I say, I just hope the club give them the backing they deserve, because they've been a major positive in what has been
a rather lousy cabinet, aren't they?
Absolutely,
need to get a bigger trophy cabinet for all their clubs and leagues and things.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, for Southampton as a whole, it's been a pretty lousy last few months, and they've been a definite bright spark.
Yeah, great to see. Right, before we go, big shout out to some of our loyal and much-loved patrons. Thank you for all your support. In our Matt Letizier tier, we've got Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Phil Cook, and Nick Higston. In the Francis Benali tier, we've got Nick Reed, Matt Hall, and David Melton. Of course, you can find out more about becoming a TSP patron and all the benefits that come with that on the website. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Glenn. I shall see you on Friday for the live events. Very much looking forward to that. Tickets are still available. There's loads of stuff we're going to talk about. We're going to properly review the season. We're going to get into whether the manager stays, whether we should make a change, all the players we want to see come and go. So it's going to be a really interesting debate. It's on Friday night. We're going to be at Five Rivers Sports Bar, all raising money for the Saints Foundation. So if you can come along, it'd be great to see you. The link to buy tickets is in the description for the podcast. Give us a follow wherever you might be listening, and you can always get in touch on the socials. It's at Total Saints Pod on Twitter and Facebook, or you can drop us an email via the website. Thanks for listening tonight. Thank you for listening throughout the season, and we'll see you on Friday for the live 200th episode.